Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the Andalusia Masters from Real Club de Golf Soto Grande and the Zozo Championship from Accordia Golf Narashino Country Club in Japan. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, as mentioned, that's right. We have some special guests and we have a debutante coming in. We've got Dave Tindall, golf writer at various outlets we know very well, and Steve Bamford, the host of the Golf Betting System podcast. Steve, great to have you. Talk to us, any nerves about the debut? How are you feeling?
It's like those Ryder Cup first tee nerves. I can imagine what they're like. I'm experiencing something very similar.
Yeah, good. I can imagine. And also, you know, high pedigree, you're all experts. And there's a bit of pressure this week, gents, because sadly, again, it wasn't on the podcast, but there are some big winners from one of the crew. Niall Lyons had the old 1-2 of Pavon Lombard over in Spain. How did you go there, Dave, in Spanish Open? What did you make of it?
Yeah, not so great in Spain last week. I didn't really do much pre-tournament, but I backed Nathan Kimsey at halfway at 14-1. So I thought he might get in a bit of a blow on the final day, but Pavon was just too good. So yeah, it was an enjoyable tournament. I remember Ewan Murray, I think at halfway on the Sky commentary, said when the leaders were sort of knocking around 11, 12 under, he said, well, we won't get to 23, 24 under this year. And lo and behold, Pavon just went away, didn't they? So a superb performance by him, and nice to see those celebratory champagne scenes on the final green with all the French guys. So yeah, it was nice to see him win.
Absolutely. You may, listeners will know that the Who Am I, which we will play later, was of course Nathan Kimsey from me. So I thought I've broken the curse and had a result. And then Pavon was too good. And I wonder how many more hand tattoos we're going to see going around the tour in the future weeks as that's come out with Pavon. Then in America, Niall does it again with Tom Kim. Incredible effort from him. Obviously one of the favourites there with Ludvig Åberg, who seems to be the favourite most weeks. What did you make of the Shriners, Steve?
It's Tom Kilville, isn't it? That Tom Kimville. It's a golf course where you've got to put it in play off the tee. Got to be a fantastic approach player, and he can be a very spotty putter. And when the putter's working for him, which it did, it's just amazing with Tom Kim, such a young player, already a three-time winner on the PGA Tour, already a runner-up at the Open Championship. You know, the sky looks the limit for him. You know, you're thinking, you know, could he be a South Korean major winner of the future? He's got that kind of pedigree behind him.
Yeah, he really does. And the other thing with it, he's also a very likeable, exciting character. He's going to have so many fans through the years as well. But very impressive from him to get the job done. But it was, of course, Ludvig Åberg put some pressure on later in that round as well. And some of these events are very exciting on the PGA Tour sort of wraparound season. But yeah, very good from Niall. Again, a few posts and crossbars on the pod itself, but it shows our experts do know their onions. And we're going to put that to the test this week as we have a look at the event starting in Spain. Yes, it's right. That's Andalusia Masters we have, and a lovely field, including the US Open champion Wyndham Clark will be teeing it up at the Real Golf Club de Soto Grande. Now, it's an interesting one this week, gents. We often have some course form. We have lots to go off. But after many years at Valderrama, we've got a shift. This course, we know a little bit, Robert Trent Jones Sr. In 1964. And there's some European Tour qualifying school events over there in the late 90s, early 2000s. But what else do we know about it? I'm going to come to you first, Dave. You can tell us if there's any other courses you sort of have compared it to or what we can learn from them.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a steer on this one. Back in, I think it was 2012, when Spain were bidding to host the Ryder Cup along with France. France won it in the end at the Golf National 2018, but Spain were trying to get that. And I was invited over to Madrid by the Spanish contingent trying to wine and dine me, which was nice. And Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño was one of the party there. So I struck up a little friendship with him down the year. So I actually texted him a couple of days ago just to see what he knew about the course. And I have some quotes. Said, yeah, Gonzalo. By the way, he's actually in Abu Dhabi at the moment. He's coaching the Spanish men's team in the Eisenhower Trophy. Just a little detail there. So very kind of him to send me a little voice message. He said, the course is magnificent, Bermuda grass. It's a very windy place. He said he'd spoke to a member of the course the other day who says, normally, he said it's very, very different to Valderrama. That's a big key because it's a lot wider fairways. But he said they have grown the roughing and narrowed the fairways for this week. But he did say as well, and I read this on a couple of course reviews, it does play a little bit like a Florida course in terms of how you might relate it to other courses. I mean, I think it's about a 10-minute drive from Valderrama, but the two courses, despite the same design, Robert Trent Jones Sr., they are very, very different places. So he says the course has been a bit wet in the build-up, so it will play a little bit longer than you think. And the greens won't run as fast as they want to. But his key was ball strikers. He said ball strikers are very much going to be to the fore this week. So, yeah, some handy little insights from Gonzalo, who's a 7-time DP World Tour winner. So I think he knows what he's on about.
Yeah, he does. Great insights. I mean, bit of pressure there for you, Steve. Now, Dave Tindall just dropped the first ever, pro player texting, giving advice on the tips. What about you with your approach to this event on the DP World Tour? Has that correlated and it was ball strikers that you sort of focused on more?
Yeah, I can't say I was on the phone to Gonzalo, but the homework I've done on it, you compare this golf course, as Dave said, it's very, very close geographically to where they previously hosted it at Valderrama, but wide off the tee or a lot wider than Valderrama. I mean, we always knew what we got with Valderrama, didn't we? Going back to the days of Tiger Woods winning golf world championships around there. Tight, claustrophobic, cork trees and oaks and eucalyptus all around the property. Very, very claustrophobic. This is a lot wider. I also have got the feeling, and it does view to be a lot more like a Florida kind of golf course. Now, what I mean by Florida golf course would be, when you check out the PGA Tour in February, PGA National, Bay Hill, of course, water everywhere, water sometimes on one side of the fairway going into the green complex. Over in Florida, it can be on both sides of the fairways as well. But this does appear to be that kind of golf course. Pretty wide off the tee. It looks to me to be a second shot golf course. If you can be high GIR, if you can be very, very accurate with your irons, both the wedges and the longer clubs, four attackable par fives. So if you're aggressive, if you've got that going for the green ability and the accuracy with the longer clubs, that could be a big, big advantage as well. And a couple of short par fours as well. So there are holes out there that can actually yield birdies and eagles. I think one of the things that looks important here, I hope I'm not jumping ahead, is the weather forecast. Because with this golf course being very, very close to the coast, it's clearly not a links golf course, but it is going to be affected by the weather that's actually in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to pick up on that because you mentioned it can get windy. And we've seen that a bit, even with the trees in Valderrama, it throws them off. Remember Beef Johnson mentioned that, Christian Bezuidenhout, and those scores around there, there were the 9-under, 10-under, and Matt Fitzpatrick was only 6-under. Dave, do you think the scoring is going to be a fair bit more generous given the width, even if the weather up? So you have to look at slightly different players, some who, don't mind winning in the, minus 15, 16 area.
Well, one of my questions to Gonzalo was, all right, what's the winning score going to be? And he didn't know. He said it's really dependent on the weather forecast because, as Steve said, it does get very windy in that area. I think you've got like 20-mile-an-hour winds for the first 2 days. It does quieten down on the weekend a little bit. But because the course is a bit wetter than normal, that will probably help scoring a little bit because it won't bound on into the rough. He said the rough, by the way, he said they've definitely grown it, but it's a bit patchy, so you might get a bit of luck here and there. There might be players who drive it a bit wild but get a break. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Yeah, winning score, hard to say. I think it's one of them ones we'll just have to see how the weather plays out. But, yeah, if Gonzalo had said, yeah, you need 25 under, he would have looked for birdie makers. Or if he'd said 8 under, then he would have looked at, you know, those who love a bit of a test. So can't really get a strong steer on that one.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Well, let's have a look at the field here, the top of the market. As mentioned, we've got Wyndham Clark around 10-1 mark, and he's one of the few who've played a fair bit on, you know, Florida type courses. So it may be an advantage or not, depending how he's gone. But then you've got Ryan Fox at 12s, Adrian Moronk at 16s, Jordan Smith, Alexander Bjork and Rasmus all around the 25-1 mark. And then you get into your Joost Loutens, Roman Langasque and Thorbjørn Olesen. It's around 28-1. But I think it's time we hear the debut. We get Steve Bamford's exclusive, the first ever pick on the tips. Who are you going to open up this week in Spain, Steve?
It's so boring. I do apologise up front here. The wind situation's really interesting this week. 20 miles an hour Thursday, could even be gusting up to 40 miles an hour, some of the forecasts are suggesting, and there might even be a sprinkle of rain in there as well. So you might be in a situation where, you know, there could be some suspension in play. Friday, wind starts to drop, but even then, it's still going to be gusting 20, 25 miles an hour. Then over the weekend, likely to be, and Dave's already mentioned it, a soft golf course. It's then going to lay, the wind's going to lay down, so it's going to be birdies and eagles galore. So you're going to have a player that just hangs around those first 36 holes and then can be near the top of the leaderboard going into it. I've actually gone, and this relates to the Rugby World Cup as well, I've actually gone for the New Zealander, Ryan Fox. I managed to pick him up yesterday at 14-1, 12-1 current price on Ryan Fox. Third at the Irish Open, first at Wentworth, second when defending at the Dunhill Links a couple of weeks ago. If he was to win this, he would jump above John Rahm in the race to Dubai into second spot. And I think that's the kind of thing that would motivate a Ryan Fox, who's now clearly into, you know, the top 30 in the world. It's President's Cup year now. So I think what we're going to see, and we're already starting to see it, is lots of international players around the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, popping up, contending, winning. So, yeah, Ryan Fox for me. I just think if you clearly took Wyndham Clark out of the betting, I think Ryan Fox would be going off at a single-digit price. So I was quite happy to take 14-1 on the New Zealander.
Absolutely, yeah. And we do know he is pretty good in inclement weather. He knows it well from his days in Auckland growing up, and he's in some fantastic form. So, hopefully he's not paired with any French players on the back of, as you mentioned, the Rugby World Cup and the Irish as well after their win. Beautiful start. So, yeah, he's now 12s, but 14, Ryan Fox. And obviously you can check out the exchange too. And then, Dave, who are you going to reply with?
Yeah, maybe we need to pick players who are from countries in the semi-finals of the Rugby World Cup, because you know, pick some South Africans, Argentinians. You've got a few good players to go at. I'm afraid I'm going for a team that are out of the World Cup, France, who got beaten in the quarters. What a set of quarterfinals they were, by the way. But I'm going with the fact that, forget rugby, last week we had a French winner, maybe that will act as some inspiration for this week. So I'm going with Julien Brun, or Julian Brown, to give his English pronunciation. Julien Brun then. So, yeah, French winner last week. One thing when you were doing the looking at the research and the stats for this week is that it did used to host an amateur event. Seems to be called the Grey Goose Cup or the Copa Sotogrande, but it's the same tournament. And he actually won it at this course in 2011 by 3 shots. I mean, it's a while back, obviously, but it's got to help, right, that he's won on this course. If what Gonzalo Fernandez-Castaño says, you need a ball striker, well, he's 11th in strokes gained approach this season. Steve said it as well. You know, look for someone high up those greens and reg stats, a good SGA stats. So he's right up there. I mean, he's also 13th around the green and 10th in putting. So he's got a lot of games, Julien Brun. I suppose the weakness possibly is his driver. So even though the fairways have been brought in a little bit this week to probably what he saw when he won back in the day, it's not Valderrama. So I think he might be able to get away with that a little bit. And he's just in really good form. He's 35th or better in 5 of his last 6 starts. That includes 6 in the Open de France, 16th in the Irish Open, 28th last week, which was a decent effort. And then the other thing I always like to look at is a player who's played well in that region or in that country. So it seems Julian Brun likes Spain because he's one of his three Challenge Tour wins came in Spain, and he was also runner-up in the Challenge Tour Grand Final. I don't know if he's got any family history there, like Pavon. Although, to be honest, that was slightly, it wasn't quite the sort of Hollywood fairy tale we thought with Pavon. I know his granddad was from Madrid, and they asked him in the interview, kind of, isn't that wonderful? He said, well, no, Franco caused him to move. So exactly the happiest story there. But there's lots of reasons to think that Julian Brun can play well this week. He's got that course history that's a bit kind of hidden under the radar. I saw it with quite a big price. 70-1, I think. Is that right? Still at 70-1. So hopefully inspired by Pavon last week, we can get another French winner.
Great, yeah. He felt the popping of champagne and thought, I want to be involved in this, clearly. And speaking of champagne, this has a great alcoholic link for this course. Clearly, Grey Goose before. We've now got the Estrella Damm Andalusia Masters. There's obviously something in the air down the Sotto Grande way. Okay, so you've both had one of your main picks out of the way. Steve, second name. Is it someone more adventurous down the betting list?
More adventurous, but it's another Kiwi.
Okay.
Daniel Hillier. Now, I've taken him at 50-1, and there were eight places with that. You can grab him right now 55-1 if you're prepared to take the old traditional five places each way and a quarter of the odds. Now, Daniel Hillier, winner at the Belfry in July. Now, he won that at 10 under par, which tells you that he can play in. I can remember that was quite blustery up front. It was a pretty, you know, we know with the Belfry, it's always a pretty stringent test. 12th at the Irish Open. After that, you know, he had a bit of a post-win lull. 9th last week after a sluggish start in Madrid. But actually, if you actually look at his scores, second round, third round, fourth round, he was progressing the whole way through. 3 top 10 finishes in Spain. I know they were all at Challenge Tour level, but one of his two victories at that level came in Spain in Costa Brava. So I just think with Daniel Hillier, he's another one of these guys. And this is something that I think is fascinating. This thing, the situation where the top 10 in the Race to Dubai rankings that are non-exempt on the PGA Tour actually grab a PGA Tour card for 2024. And there is a whole list of players that can still get into that top 10, Hillier being one of them. So I think, you know, that's a huge carrot. He's finding some form. He's played well in Spain before. So, yeah, I'm going with Daniel Hillier as my second selection.
Lovely. I mean, as you say, I'm not sure there would have ever been a Kiwi 1-2 on the old European Tour, now DP World Tour, but they could be very motivated after maybe watching New Zealand, well, get into the final, which they're big favourites for, obviously.
We do see this, though, in golf. And, you know, clearly Dave's tapped into it. You do see nationalities, and these guys stick together on tour. You do see a win for one nationality. It could be Australia, and all of a sudden, you're getting Australian wins coming over a number of weeks afterwards. That is a thing in golf. That definitely is.
Absolutely. And we saw that with Hillier's win and Fox. They were the first people around them to congratulate. In very rare, even the Australians get round Ryan Fox, which wouldn't happen in most other sports. So it is nice to see that. Okay, beautiful. So a Kiwi double there from Mr. Bamford on his debut. Dave, your second big outright before we get in the extra bonus picks.
I'm looking forward to hearing that Steve has picked Dan Carter for one of his bonus picks.
he is perfect. He could play probably off scratch, I reckon. Yeah.
yeah, probably. I'm going with somebody. Let me think. Well, the Dutch did beat Greece 1-0 in the Euros the other day. Virgil van Dijk with a late penalty. So Joost Luiten, who clearly would have been inspired by that.
Big South Africa links with Netherlands. You know, the rugby.
Yeah. So, yeah. This isn't tenuous at all, is it? Yeah, we're going with the tried and trusted ball striker angle, I think, with Joost Luiten. 5th for the season in strokes gained tee to green, 15th on approach. He's been threatening to win, hasn't he, for quite a long time now to get another win under his belt. It should have been in Germany in the BMW International Open, but he messed up down the stretch. But rather than feel sorry for himself, he's been still really good since then. He was eighth at the British Masters the following week, top five at Cranz, four top 20s in his last five starts. Another one came last week. And I've said before on here, he is the player with the best website because he actually tells you what how he's feeling, how his game is week after week. Go on to Hugh Slouton's website and he'll tell you exactly as it is. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. So, for example, he's tied 20th last week. He said his swing wasn't great. He said his timing was off, which isn't what you want to hear, to be honest, to begin with. But then he reamed on and he said, my short game was really good. It kept me in it, as did his putting. But then what he did say, a little nugget right at the end, was he said, my swing felt better on the back nine in the final round on Sunday. So maybe it's one of those ones where he's just found something, as golfers do. They can be struggling. Suddenly a little click comes in and he carries that into the next week. Because if it has clicked, we're talking about a guy who in September, strokes gained approach, he gained 22 strokes on approach across three events. And that's superb ball striking. So if he can get back to those levels, then we, I think he'll be right up there. A little few other things he said. He played Sotto Grande as an amateur, which is another nice link. I did actually check to see if he had any Florida form. It's been a while, but I remember him having a bit of a crack over there quite a few years ago. And he did actually play quite well. He had two top 15s in his first three starts in Florida, so maybe the visuals suit him a little bit. But Hugh Slouton, I think he deserves his body of work this season has been really impressive. And I thought 28-1, it could be the time to strike with him. And hopefully when I read his website again next week, it'll be full of triumphant glory that he's finally got back to winning ways.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, he's clearly got winning pedigree. Seems like one of those names that's always in these events up and around there. And you just hope he just, can put all four rounds together and he'll be competing with the very best. Okay, lovely. They're the two main outrights, but always, Steve, we can throw some extra names out there. We have a fancy game where, you need six players along those lines. So now you've run out of New Zealanders to pick. Give us another one or two names. You can roll them back to back off each other that you've caught your eye for this week.
I'm going for a home player who's a 9-time winner on the DP World Tour. And I found him at 90-1, Pablo Larrazabal. And with some bad weather in town over those opening 36 holes, Pablo can hang around when conditions get tough. I grabbed him at 90-1. He's 80-1, five places have caught the odds at the moment. You can get him 71 if you want multi-placing. 2022 ISPS Handicap Championship. He won last year in Spain at the Infinitum Lakes course, which actually was one of these kind of open affairs with water on around the course quite a bit. So I like that. He also won this year in Korea. And the other thing is, those two wins came with strokes gained approach rankings of fourth and sixth. So I know that Pablo can be very erratic. It can be five missed cuts. And then he challenges for a victory. But actually, 20th last week in Madrid, I could see Pablo being very, very strong this week. So that's one that I like at that 90-1 price point. The other one, and we mention this a lot, PGA Tour guys that come back and play DP World Tour and the relevant and the levels that they're playing at. This guy played very, very well last week over in Las Vegas. I know the travel isn't perfect, but Matthias Schmid, the German, played really, really well last week, 26th at the Shriners Open. And if this turns into a real birdie fest over the Saturday and the Sunday, this guy, who can be a little bit errant off the tee, and Dave said we've got the wider, softer conditions, that will suit Pablo. It would also suit someone like Matthias Schmid. He can go seriously low. So if he can kind of hang around over those testing first 2 days, over a weekend, you could see the German Matthias Schmidt coming up the leaderboard over the weekend. So those are my two.
Beautiful. Yeah. Schmidt has a big future. We've heard a lot about that. And he's been, I think, mentioned a few times in the PGA Tour, some of those other events. And yeah, Pablo, and we talk about, you know, home sort of national opens and in your tournaments in your country. He loves support and cheering the crowd up more than anyone. So if he gets in contention, you could see him sticking around and it being very lively viewing at the best of times. He doesn't mind some gesticulation, does Pablo? Lovely stuff, Steve. Dave, what about you? I think there was another two or three names to throw at us to this week.
Yeah, I've got three more. Guido Migliozzi, the Italian. He's another one who's won at the course. His was back in 2014. He won that Grey Goose Cup. Actually, in the field that week, there was a guy called Victor Hovland, whatever happened to him. Beat him by about 16 shots, I think. But Migliozzi is a funny one. He doesn't always, you know, show up week on week, but he's got some really top form on good courses. You know, he won at Le Golf National last year. He's got six at Valderrama, fourth at Torrey Pines in the US Open, also 14th at Brookline in the US Open. So he's a guy who, on his day, he's absolutely on up there with the best of them. He's about 60-1, so I quite liked him. And then a couple of Scottish players to finish my team. Ewan Ferguson, he's in really good form. He was ninth last week, 10th in the Open de France, where he was the 54-hole leader. That didn't go as planned, but he's a three-time winner. I think sometimes the Scots guys, the younger ones, seem to get thrown in as a kind of they're on similar levels, but he's one who gets over the line, which is good. He's 17th in strokes gained approach, so again, I think that's a good fit for the course, really good record in Spain. And then the one that intrigues me is Bob McIntyre. You can actually get 33-1 on Bob McIntyre. Now, if it's the Bob McIntyre that came alive in the Ryder Cup, obviously Justin Rose carried him for the first day and a bit, but then Bob McIntyre really just found something, didn't he? And by the end, he was beating Wyndham Clark, who's in the field this week. Bob McIntyre's three times his price. So he's an intriguing one because 33-1 could look a daft price, a way too big a price if he finds his game. Because he can play, if you look at past winners of the amateur events here, it's a lot of people who are big names, like Rory's won here, Sergio's won there, Harrington, Lathabal. So Bob McIntyre, someone who can really, you know, has been on a Ryder Cup team. He's played well in Open Championships before. 25th at the Dunhill. So straight after the Ryder Cup, he went to the Dunhill. And I know Matt Fitzpatrick won to show you can immediately kick on and play well the week after. I think Bob McIntyre, maybe not everyone reacts the same. John Rahm, for example, he found it maybe tough to get going again in Spain last week. I think Bob McIntyre did okay, I thought. He was 25th at the Dunhill, shot, I think, 65 in his third round to suggest he was coming alive again. I just think if he's got those good vibes from Rome, he could do some damage here. And I did look through the amateur results here, and he played here twice in that Grey Goose Cup and came 6th and 7th in the individual event. So he's got some form as well. So it's a fascinating one. I think Bob McIntyre, he wants to win this season. He was close, wasn't he, in the Scottish Open when Rory somehow did him on 17 and 18. But 33-1 could look a really big price on Bob McIntyre.
There's one little
sort of negative. He's really thinking about whether he should move to the States full time. You know, he loves Oban where he lives, his family there, but I don't know if that'll sort of mess with his head a little bit. But if he's focused, I think he can ride the wave of the Ryder Cup and be another Ryder Cup European winner who goes on and gets a victory soon after. So, yeah, Bob McIntyre at 33-1 is the one I'm sort of intrigued by this week.
Yeah, we've seen half that price from many times. And if we're talking inclement weather, I mean, Alfred Dunhill doesn't get more than that. And Bob knows it all very well. He's played some windy ones up at Renaissance as well recently. So, he could be a very good price there. Lovely. Plenty of names there for you. But there's one more that we're going to find out. And it's during a game of Who Am I? Yes, so Steve, you are a debutant. So how this works is I've picked a golfer and I'm giving some hints and you can jump in. So it'll be five clues. After each clue, you can hold back if you want to wait for another one. That's fine. But it may get stolen by Dave Tindall, who's got pretty good pedigree in this competition. He's no kit on the course, but he's right up there. And how it works is I'll give them and you have to work out who it is in the field. The clues start harder and then supposedly get a bit easier. So we will get going with this. And for the first clue of who am I is I was born in Orange, California. As I said, this is a bit of a throw off, but if you know it, well played.
Well, it's not going to be Wyndham Clark, is it? Obviously.
You've probably got his phone number, Dave, whoever this guy is.
No, perfect. We're going for, I did think I would be checking, you know, someone cheating. That would be a Wikipedia job. Okay, in for the second clue, which has been mentioned, actually, the Eisenhower Trophy World Team Championship, I won in 2009. I won't tell you who for, because that will be a big clue, but 2009 on the Eisenhower.
And Ring Gonzalo.
Okay, we're going to go on to the third clue. I broke into the world's top 50 rankings in 2018. After a few years.
Top 50 in the world in 2018.
It's the fact they were born in California that's the odd one.
I know, I wanted to throw that out there.
It's sort of putting me off stuff.
I wouldn't, don't think anything about America, basically.
If I had broken the world's top 50, you could have like Eddie Pepperell or something, but it's not going to be him because he's not born in California, is he?
Number four, we're going to clue four. I'm a five-time winner on the DP World Tour.
Five.
And it goes without saying they were sort of in that, well, up until 2018.
Five.
It's certainly not Jordan Smith.
No.
Not Jordan Smith.
No. Five-time winner.
I got a fifth clue, and then I will throw in a bonus sixth if we need it. The fifth clue being, my nickname is El Toro. It's often on his hat.
So that's a Spaniard then.
I wouldn't be too sure.
It's not a Spaniard.
This is going well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really good. And for a podcast, the silence is good. So I'm just going to fill it in with, in 2017, I became the first two-time winner of the Volvo China Open in the history of the event.
Oh, dear.
But now I just need a winner of the Volvo China Open.
I'm not going to look on Wikipedia, although it put us all out of our misery, I suppose. But
any guess? Any
give us his nationality.
The other wins, Portugal Masters, Porsche European Open, and Trophy Hassan Deux. And I won the Eisenhower Trophy for France.
France.
Is it Victor Perez?
It's not Victor Perez.
Five-time winner.
It's not Alexander Levy, is it?
Steve Bamford, the debut win. It is Alexander.
Alexander Levy. My partner at the Golf Betting System podcast, Paul Williams, that is his favourite to play. He's lost most money on Alexander Levy over the years. Had to get that right.
There we go. Yeah, had to get it right. You got there. We got there in the end. But yeah, he's around the 200 mark still, Mr. Levy. And I just
didn't even know he was in the field.
Love it.
You are a cruel man, a very, very cruel man.
I just thought, you know, a bit of wind, you can drive it anywhere. But I thought, Levy, this is, and just coming out of nowhere, he seems to be that sort of guy.
I backed him when he won in Portugal. I backed him at 66-1 because I think he won after 36 holes.
Yes.
So I was just, come on, abandon it. And I got paid out.
Well, there you go. Just a reminder to all you listening that if you do enjoy a game but don't want to bet, then our fantasy game on the DP World Tour website is perfect for you. You can select six players for the week and compete against friends and families for bragging rights. And the guys here, Steve and Dave, have given you plenty of good names to build out that side. Right, Steve is brimming with confidence on the back of that debut win of Who Am I? So we're going to roll that straight into the Zozo Championship, which is a co-sanctioned event between the American circuit and the Japan Golf Tour with a limited field, but some phenomenal names in there. I'm going to start with the top of the market, where we've got, you know, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa at 7-1 and 10-1 respectively, Ricky Fowler and then 14-1, and then Hideki Matsuyama 16-1, Sung Jae-in 18-1, and Minwoo Lee off the back of a win over that side of the world at 20-1 as well. So great names in there, and there's some seriously impressive past winners at this course. So we're looking at the likes of Keegan Bradley, Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, Tiger Woods. The first thing that came to my mind, Steve, is looking at those names, was there a bit of a correlation with a certain little event that's played in Augusta? Because there are some winners and good performers there, including, you know, not just the obvious Woods, who in 19 obviously did both, and Matsuyama, who's done both, but Fowler's up there as well. Is that something that you found?
There's definitely Augusta. Also, and Dave would point you in this direction as well, Firestone Country Club, where they always used to play the WGC Bridgestone Invitational.
Yeah.
Keegan Bradley's a winner there. I think he was second when he defended there. Tiger Woods owned the place. And Hideki Matsuyama's won there as well. Very, very long par 70, straight holes with trees either side. That was Firestone over in Akron. So there are some quite strong course links, actually, when you go through the winners. Another one I could see was Bay Hill, and you can also turn that over to PGA National, where they have traditionally played the Honda Classic. So, yeah, there's definitely some course correlation in there. I've really got no idea why, though, because this golf course is completely non-Florida golf course, Narashino Country Club. It's a par 70, although it features three par fives. It's short, underneath. It's under 7,100 yards. Holes with water in play, 4 out of the 18. And people that know me know that I love my golf course agronomy. We're dealing with zoysia grass fairways, zoysia grass rough, and the greens are bent grass this week. So that zoysia grass is something that you find over in the United States. I mean, in Australia and wherever. It's an international grass. But if you're looking at PGA Tour form, somewhere like Southwind, where they used to play the WGC, the Southwind, the St. Jude Classic, and they now play the first, they call it the FedEx St. Jude Invitational. That's at Southwind. Also, of course, East Lake. That is another golf course that features zoysia grass, fairways and rough. And actually, you look at Bradley, clearly Tiger. I mean, Tiger's a cheat code, though, isn't he? Matsuyama, they tend to have got decent results at Southwind, at East Lake. So, yeah, there could be something in the grass there, the zoysia.
Okay, perfect. So, yeah, it's a different type of grass, which bizarrely is also at my course over in Australia, which is one of the early ones as well, up by Byron Bay way. So yeah. I can tell you, tight chipping. So I would go well there as well. We're looking through the history. Patrick Cantlay's win, obviously, a bit of a misnomer because it was in California and a much lower score, 23 under there. But how do you go, Dave, and how do you enjoy limited field events? Because I think there's only 82 or so named. Do you find that easy, it narrows down the names for you naturally, or obviously the odds are impacted? Where do you sort of stand on that, and how's your background been with it?
Yeah, it's a 78 man field, I think. It's sort of half, isn't it? I think it's sometimes when you look at prices and you think someone's a little bit short, you think, well, hang on, there's only half the players playing. And then sometimes you can get a price on a player that seems about right for a full field, and he's that price in half a field, and you think, actually, that's a pretty good price there. I do tend to like them because, you know, less chance of a freak winner, I guess. I haven't been in contact with the Japanese Prime Minister, so I don't know about the course. I was in Tokyo, actually, in April. If I'd known I was going to be on the tips, I would have gone over and checked it out. It's in Tokyo Bay, which is about 25 miles outside of the city centre. You can actually get a monorail there. I did actually go across to Tokyo Bay, but I didn't see that golf course. My kids wanted to see some giant robot thing, but they weren't having a golf.
You didn't want to drag them to Chiba, no?
Yeah.
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 And then we went down south as well to to see all the Mario World stuff, which was fun. But yeah, in terms of this, Steve's come up with the sort of clever correlations. I've taken a more direct approach and just actually, rather than saying, well, because he's played well there, he might play well here, I've just gone straight down the he's played well here before, so he likes it's kind of route. Yep. Because if you look at the two winners, or the latest two winners, Keegan Bradley, before he won, he was 7th the year before, 13th the year before that, so clearly he liked the course. Matsuyama, when he won it, had been runner-up the year before. So I think having a good result, having a good knock on this course already, because, yeah, it's sort of tree-lined. There's some obvious clues, lots of dogleg, water. You can make the clever correlations, but I think if you've played well there before, because you've got to remember as well, some of the American guys who played there have done well there before would have had to have dealt with the, you know, time difference, acclimatizing and all that kind of stuff. Because we used to see it in another Asian event, the Sim Classic. Justin Thomas won that one back to back. I think Gary Woodland was runner up back to back. So I think if you like go into, you know, an overseas country on a course and it goes well once, I think there's a good chance it might go well again. So I've sort of lent on that as a way in.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And we're talking about the time difference. I did think that some of these American players particularly have got some serious air miles in recent weeks when you're considering Rome back to America, now into Japan. So it'd be interesting to see how that is affecting them at all. But let's get into it. And this time we'll start with you, Dave, actually, to open up with your first pick at the Zozo Championship.
Yeah. So as I said, I'm going with a player who likes the course. He's been there before and done well. Cameron Champ. Thought he was a big price, 70-1. Again, as I said, this is a limited field, and he's a guy who's really found some form. So when he went there last year, he was in terrible shape. He'd missed his previous three cuts. Then he missed the three cuts afterwards, which is also worth noting because it shows for some reason he did click on this course, something he liked about it. So he was eighth last year on his debut, shot 64 in the third round. So he was fifth with a round to go. But it's a totally different Cameron Champ we're seeing at the moment. He was 17th at the Barracuda a few months ago, and then last 2 weeks, 9th at the Sanderson Farms, and then 18th in Las Vegas last week, where he started with a 63, closed with a 65. I read some of his quotes. Luckily, he's been pulled in for interview in the last weeks or two, and he's used words like solid control of my ball, confident on the greens, I'm in a good space. Free spirited, he kept using, which somehow seems quite Japanesey. So he's in a really good mental headspace, Cameron Champ, which is good. And another little thing we've probably mentioned on the tips before is the nappy factor. The idea when you have a baby, suddenly your results improve. He's got a 12-week-old youngster, and I presume he's not going to Japan with him, he might be, but it might help him get some sleep, Cameron Champ, even if it doesn't. I think he's obviously dealing with a little toddler, well, a little baby, so his sleep patterns are everywhere, so maybe he'll be less affected by the kind of the time zone difference than most. Maybe he's been, you know, he's been up and about and alert at the times he'd be playing golf. But expanding on his quotes, and this was a nice little thing I found when he was interviewed, when he was eighth here, the last time, he said, I like it here, Japan, just the atmosphere, the culture. I've always played well in Japan. I'm not sure why, but I just enjoy being here. I played here a couple of times as a junior and an amateur. I just enjoy it. So, yeah, I had no idea that he played in Japan apart from last year's eighth. But he was eighth in the Dunlop Phoenix, which is quite a well-known Japanese tour event. I think Tigers won it, I think Duval won it 1 year. We see Thomas Bjorn's done really well in it. So, yeah, for whatever reason, he's one of those guys who just loves Japan. So I think that's all good, isn't it? When you've got a player who's got some confidence anyway, going to a country that he really likes, I think he could really cause an impact this week. 71 to me looks a very big price.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's at 60s, but, you know, other bookies have him at 33. So there's obviously a big discrepancy there. And some people were also reading his quotes or just chatting to Dave Tindall, clearly. So there you go. Cam Champ opening up. And I know, Steve, you and the guys, the golf betting system, Paul Williams, you're all over nappy factors. Are they going to feature for your opening pick this week at the Zozo?
No, Full disclosure, I am on Cam Champ at 60-1. So I took the 8 places available on Cam Champ. I love his chances this week. It's funny with Cam Champ. He's 127th in the FedEx Cup standing. So he's effectively playing for full playing privileges, because I think his win exemptions have run down this year. So all of a sudden, new baby, reality strikes. All of a sudden, he's playing some very nice golf and stringing some great results together. I do also like that link, Dave, to the Dunlop Phoenix. I tell you where I'm heading with my first tip. Really, really obvious, but we mentioned this earlier. Sometimes you see a player and you look at his odds and you just think, well, he's often shorter in full field events. And when the prices came out on this on Monday, the first shows, I couldn't believe that I saw 20-1 about this individual. That soon went. But I managed to get involved at 18-1. He's now 14-1 generally available. Sung Jae-in. Now, Sung Jae has got third place on this course back in 2019. That was the year that Tiger Woods won here. It was rain-lashed. I was on Gary Woodland that year, and Tiger just pulled away. He dominated that tournament. But Sung Jae-in finished third that year. And actually, you look at Sung Jae and what he's been doing recently. In the FedEx Cup playoffs, he played quite nicely. Then he disappeared and he went off and did his thing, didn't he? He went off to the Asian Games, and there was him and Siwoo Kim, and they were playing for something quite important. If they could get a gold medal, that would mean that they would then not have to do military service in South Korea. Lo and behold, Sung Jae-im gets a silver medal in the individual and teams up with Siwoo. They win the gold medal in the team event. So joy and rapture there, avoiding their mandated military service. He then flies back to South Korea from China, plays last week at the Genesis Championship, which is clearly a Korean tour event, doesn't win. Which, you know, for a player of Sung Jae Im's ability, you would assume that he would. But he did make a playoff. I think he led, I think he was 2 shots clear heading into the final round. He ended up in a 3-man playoff, got beat. But I think that's the only, he's played on that 2 or 3 times. He's won 2 and finished 2nd. But I just think Sung Jae Im, he's been in the Asian area now for coming on a month. So the travel isn't an issue. He's acclimatised. He's got a top 3 finish here. And actually, if you're looking at golf courses, and we mentioned earlier PGA National in Florida, also at Bay Hill, he's got a great record. Clearly, I think his first win on the PGA Tour was the Honda Classic at PGA National. I think he then went, he's got a very, very solid record at Bay Hill as well. Wherever you're looking, I think he was 72 hole. He finished 2nd also at Eastlake a couple of years ago. So gets on okay with the Zoysia. I just thought that 18-1 price point, even 14-1, I couldn't resist. So Sung Jae-im was my headline bet this week at the Zozo.
Perfect. Yeah, as you say, last week he went very close and I saw he was 7-1 and a lot of people jumped on that. And to be only double the price in a much stronger field, obviously, is very, very interesting. So he's around the same price you can get for, you know, Ricky Fowler's and former champion here, Hideki Matsuyama. Okay, Dave, your second outright selection this week?
Yeah, I agree with Steve on Sung Jae-im. There's quite a lot of players at the front end where you think, yeah, they'll probably be right up there. So I'm looking a bit further down. Maybe he's an each-way play, but you never know. He might get the win. Tom Hoagie, for me, is one of those players that I think a lot of people were on him last week, and he didn't do so well in Vegas. Shot a pair of 71s. Nothing particularly wrong with that. And it's easy to then abandon him. You know, he's not on it anymore. But I think it might be just a bit hasty to write him off. And because before that, he'd come over to Wentworth, got a top 15, another top 15 in the Sanderson Farms. So it was easy to see why he'd be popular in Vegas where he had course form. It didn't happen for him. But I think if you sort of don't get on the birdie train in that event, you're kind of falling away, and he didn't make the weekend. So not to worry, we move on and we come to this course. And again, I'm leaning on the angle of playing well here in the past. And he's come over twice to Japan, 17th here on debut in 2021, 9th last year when he shot 7 shots better, so a clear improvement. And again, it's a fairly simple argument. A good player would course form. And last week in Vegas, I know maybe the field wasn't as good as this week, but he was sort of 28, maybe best price 33 in Vegas. He's 55s here in half the field. So I just thought it was one where I think over the years, a mistake you can make is you get so keen about someone for a particular event. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're getting told by their people that, oh, this is your week, you know, you're in form, you love this course. And it doesn't happen. It's almost like everyone expected it. There's like a group punt on him, and it just doesn't happen. And then next week, you know, lo and behold, then they go and play well. And everyone's, why did you do that last week? But it's just the sort of mentality of the game. And it's just a fresh start, isn't it? Going over to Japan, a totally different environment. So very much a price play, I think, at 55-1, Tom Hoge. But I didn't want to see him do that thing where everyone's on him for the one event and then he pops up the week after. So I'm going to give him another go.
Okay. In Hoge, you trust, absolutely. And we've seen that he is a bit of a momentum player. Like in that early time, 2022, came out of nowhere, was winning at Pebble Beach, you say. Then the players, he had the course record 10 under, I think this year, 62. So obviously some impressive form in there for Hoge, and he's still around that price point for you. Okay, Steve, who are you throwing another name at us now?
So I've gone Kiwi. I suppose I should go Aussie, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
So what about Cam Davis? He's very, very obvious. He's very, very obvious. He's 25-1 I managed to snag yesterday on Cam Davis. Third at the Fortinet, and he was seventh last week at the Shriners. For me, Cam Davis is one of these, these guys that's just establishing himself within that world's top 50. I think he's mid-40s. That's also a very good call on Tom Hoge, because Tom Hoge's fighting for that top 50 spot for the end of the year. And of course, you know that if you're in the world's top 50 come Christmas, you get the 2024 Masters invite. So this top 50 in the world is a big deal, and players are fighting tooth and nail to either get into that top 50 or remain in that top 50. Davis, mid-40s, he's the kind of player, though, that I know he's a big buccaneering driver, but actually, you look at most of his results, he tends to do better on the shorter golf courses, loves tree-lined parkland courses, so this course should suit. But it's just the fact, you know, 8 top 10 finishes since March. It's just been so consistent. I could, you know, you could just see that next logical step for Cam being a second PGA Tour victory. He won the 2021 Rocket Mortgage Classic. They played at a Detroit Golf Club, which is a par 70 tree line bent mixed with Poana greens. So he's fine on bent grass greens. That's a classical course. So I can just see him going well this week. It's obvious, but I couldn't resist Cam Davis at 25-1. I think he was top 30 here last year on his course debut, and he's playing far, far better than he was last year.
Yeah, 29th, as you say, last year. And yeah, a very impressive player. The noise out of Australia for years about him has been very, very impressive. So there you go. That's the main picks. But of course, as always, we need to fill out those different fancy teams. And there's a couple of other, you know, prices out there that could be of interest. So Dave, do you want to rattle off your other two or three that we've got?
Yeah, another Aussie, another obvious one. I think Minwoo Lee, 20-1. I think you mentioned right at the start, Ollie, that he'd won in Macau last week. So he's acclimatised, winning form. Shot some really low numbers, didn't he, in Macau?
Yeah.
He'd been in good form before that. It's his course debut, so we're guessing a bit there, but everything suggests, you know, a classy player. He should play well. He's 20-1. Another 20-1 shot that I like is Sahith Tigala. He won the Fortinet. Big breakthrough there for him after a pair of top 15, so he kind of signaled that a win was coming. He got that win in California. He played here last year and was fifth, which obviously I like the course form angle this week. And one thing with him, I think there's so much he does well in his game, but his driving has been kind of a bit wonky and has held him back. But I looked, he's gained strokes off the tee in his last six events, so clearly he's sorted that out a bit. So I like him. And then there's a bigger price, a player who sort of comes and goes a bit. Sometimes he looks, you know, really great, and he's going to, he got the confidence to take on the world. Matt Wallace, 66-1. He's just had some big finishes in big events. He's not someone who comes sort of 25th every week. He tends to either flop or be right up there, sort of boom or bust character maybe. So he was 6th in the Alfred Dunhill Links, 28th in Vegas, 66s in rounds 2 and 4, a runner-up in the Czech Masters in August. And he's got the course form here. He was 4th in 2021. So another guy, once his tail's up, if he starts well, I could see him making an impact. So 66-1, Matt Wallace as well to round out my team.
Great. I mean, good to get some English love because they are also in the Rugby World Cup semi-finals when we forgot to mention it earlier. And Matt also listens to the podcast. As we know, he messaged in a few weeks back saying, don't sleep on me for a Ryder Cup wildcard selection. He was there, but he was doing commentary for a bit of it. So, Matt, if you have tuned in again, you'll be very pleased to hear that Dave Tindall likes. You've probably already texted Dave saying you like the course, if we know Dave's phone. So there you go. That completes Dave's picks, leaving Steve, you to round off the show with some extra names in Japan.
I fancy Adam Schenk. Now, Adam Schenk on the choir has had a kind of breakout year on the PGA Tour. Cast your mind back, 2nd at the Valspar Championship. Now, that was the tournament where Schenk was near the top of the leaderboard. So was Jordan Spieth, Tommy Fleetwood, and in the end, Taylor Moore came and took the title, his first PGA Tour victory. He then went to Colonial Country Club, and I think he was leading by a couple going into Sunday, ended up in a playoff, and he finished 2nd at the Charles Schwab Challenge. So again, you've got two pretty tight, relatively tough golf courses there in Colonial and Copperhead. 7th at the Memorial, 7th at the Rocket Mortgage. He was 4th at the John Deere Classic. That's another tree line bent grass golf course that they play up in Illinois, and then goes into the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then qualifies for the Tour Championship, which is amazing. First time he's ever done that. He did that by finishing 6th at the FedEx St. Jude Championship, as we said, Southwind, Zorja grass, fairways and rough. He then went to the Tour Championship for the first time, and actually finished 9th in the FedEx Cup standings, which basically earned him a cool $1 million for finishing 9th. But he was actually T6 for 72-hole scoring around Eastlake. So he's clearly in good nick. And it's a little bit like Dave was saying with Tom Hoge. There were a few on Adam Schenk last week at Summerlin, but he hadn't played golf since the Tour Championship, a bit rusty. He missed the cut on the number. But actually, I think Schenk could go very well this week. He's finished 22nd, 28th and 16th here. He's played here all three times. And actually, across those outings when he was nowhere near the player he is today, 15th after 54 holes, 9th after 54 holes and 8th after 36 holes last year. So Adam Schenk was there. Now he's up there. A good week this week again would solidify his top 50 in the world, and then he gets his first ever Masters invite. So I think Schenk's a player to follow. The other one, I think KH Lee might have some juice in him. He's got a very, very good Japan Tour resume when you look at that. Also, SH Kim has played very, very well. I believe he won the Japan PGA last year, or the Japan Open, SH Kim. He was 2nd at the Fortinet a few weeks ago behind Sahid Tagala. The other one I'll throw out there, I do like Matt Wallace, is Joel Damon. I think Joel Damon's playing some very nice golf at the moment. Clearly top 10 at Brookline a few years ago. He was 8th here heading into Sunday last year, finished 16th. Damon finished top 10, didn't he, last week at Summerlin. So yeah, Damon as well. Those are my players for the Zozo.
Fantastic. Yeah, some popular names in there for sure. And Damon, I think, spoke on Twitter about with his cat Gino needing some good weeks and finding that form again. And then he certainly seems to be doing that. Him and his bucket hat are travelling well. Plenty of names there. Lots of insight and great stats. So just going to quickly give a recap on all the names that have been thrown out by Steve and Dave. Yes, as mentioned, plenty of names in there for you. And now as a quick recap of them all, we're going to start with the debutant, Steve Bamford. He opened up in Andalusia with the Kiwi double of Ryan Fox and Daniel Hillier. And then the local Spaniard, Pablo Larrazabal, and the returning from PGA Tour action German, Matti Schmid, round up his four picks there. And then in the Zozo, it was Sung Jae Im and Cam Davis is headlining his ways. And then some longer shots in Adam Schenk, Cam Champ, KH Lee, and Joel Damon. And then we're looking at Dave Tindall, who in Spain at the Estrella Damm Andalusia Masters from Real Golf Club de Soto Grande liked Frenchman Julien Brun and Dutchman Joost Louten. And then he mentioned Guido Migliozzi, Ewan Ferguson, and also Bob McIntyre. And then in the Zozo Championship, it was Cameron Champ and Tom Hoagie as his main picks, with Sahith Tagala, Minwoo Lee, and Englishman Matt Wallace rounding off his selections this week. That's it for this week. An epic show there. An hour of just good golf listening for you. Hopefully it's helped you pick and identify some winners in both events this week. I need to say a massive thank you to Dave Tindall and Steve Bamford. Dave, you know by now, you can find him at Dave Tindall Golf. But Steve, can you let the listeners please know where they can find you on socials? And also, like in a post-match press conference, just a couple of words, how you thought you performed today.
I performed okay. I'd give myself 6 out of 10.
We'll give you
I'll be better on the next. If I'm invited back, I'll get a better score than that. At Bamford Golf on X, Twitter in brackets.
Perfect. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You will definitely be invited back, as will you, Dave. Congrats on the win on Who Am I, Steve? And that's it for this week. Next week, the PGA Tour is having a little breather, but join us for the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. Until then, enjoy the golf. Good luck with all of your picks this week, and we'll see you next time on The Tips.